Hello, listeners, and welcome to the sixth episode of the House of Deputies Blue Book podcast. I am your host, President of the House of Deputies, Julia Ayala Harris, and it's my pleasure to guide you through the fascinating world of the General Convention and its interim bodies. This podcast is your bridge to stay informed, engaged, and connected with the pulse of the Episcopal Church, whether you're a deputy to the 81st General Convention, a member of a local parish, or simply a church geek. You have come to the right place for valuable insights, thought-provoking conversations, and a deeper understanding of our church's role in today's rapidly changing world. The General Convention is the governing body of the Episcopal Church, meeting every 3 years. This time we're meeting 2 years later because of the pandemic. It's made up of deputies and bishops from each diocese. And in the months leading up to General Convention, a number of Blue Book reports are created by standing committees, task forces, and what we call interim bodies of the Episcopal Church. Interim because they're bodies between General Conventions. These reports provide background, context, and review process on various church initiatives and programs. They also put forth policy recommendations for priorities, budgets, and potential resolutions for General Convention to consider. In the past, the reports were published in a book with a blue cover, hence the term Blue Book Reports. Brilliant, isn't it? This book helps deputies and bishops prepare for discussions and decisions at General Convention. However, it's important to note the Blue Book is now completely virtual and is no longer a literal book, but that's for the General Convention office to answer. Some of the key Blue Book reports cover topics like the church's budget, social justice issues, church structure and governance, liturgy and music, ministry programs, ecumenical relations, and more. Blue Book reports shape the agenda and output of each General Convention. They provide critical information that underpins the church's priorities, policies, budget, and administration for the next triennium. Today, we are joined by Deputy Kate Bond from the Task Force to Study Congregational Vitality Indicators and Deputy Barbie Okotemoto-Bach from the Task Force on Care of Creation and Environmental Racism for a profound conversation on how the church addresses the pressing need for environmental justice while promoting congregational growth and vitality. Deputies Bond and Bach share insights into the innovative approaches to measure and enhance congregational health alongside the church's commitment to combating environmental racism and caring for creation. This episode highlights the interconnectedness of faith and environmental stewardship, showcasing the church's efforts to nurture vibrant communities that are both spiritually fulfilling and actively engaged in ecological advocacy. So let's dive right in. Welcome, Deputy Kate Bond and Deputy Barbie Bach, to this episode.
Thank you for having me.
I'm just so excited to have this one and to introduce you two to each other. Kate, tell us a little bit about yourself, what diocese you're in, and what your ministry is in the church.
So I am the Director of Faith Formation and Discipleship in the Episcopal Diocese of Oklahoma.
And I think I know that diocese a little bit.
And I get to, in that role, I get to serve all of our congregations and our diocesan institutions by helping promote spiritual practices, training, formation. And also, I work heavily in the area of congregational vitality, which is one of our primary mission priorities in the Diocese of Oklahoma. I am an Okie. I was born here and raised here. And while I've always lived in Oklahoma City, a couple years ago, I married a farmer. And I now live in Western rural Oklahoma, which is a big change in learning, but has been a wonderful experience.
I feel like that could be a whole nother podcast too. Like, how do you go, you know, because there's the rural urban church, like sort of divide, like there is in our society. And oh my gosh, that'd be so interesting. Yeah. Barbie, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you are, your ministry areas.
Well, thank you, Julia. Thanks for having me. So I'm Barbie Okotemoto-Bach. I am a lay canon in the Diocese of New Jersey, which occupies unceded ancestral lands of the Lenni Lenape peoples, who tended to the lands and the environment with great care. I'm also a third generation Japanese American. I'm a third generation Episcopalian. So my parents and my grandparents' priest in Nebraska was Father Kano, who is a modern day Episcopal saint, included in the Holy Women and Men.
Yes.
And so this is my third general convention, and I serve on the Deputies of Color Steering Committee and as co-chair of the Asian Caucus of Deputies of Color. In my diocese, I'm an active lay leader. I've been involved in racial justice ministries for a long time, specifically anti-racism and reparations efforts, and Diocesan Council, Standing Committee, Cathedral Chapter, and Environmental Commission. And I currently chair the Diocesan Creation Care Committee. So my academic training is in geology. And like many geologists, I worked for a while as a petroleum geologist with Big Oil. And for you Oklahoma ladies, you know Big Oil. Because our training location was in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Oh my gosh.
But then I redeemed my soul, and I also worked for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, as an environmental scientist and a Superfund regional manager. And with that training, I have served on the presiding bishop's delegation to COP26 and COP28. Mm-hmm. And I served on the task force for care of creation and environmental racism, and now legislative committee number 15, environmental stewardship and care of creation. Mm-hmm. And in my spare time, I also serve on the Conservancy Council of the New Jersey chapter of the Nature Conservancy, which is a global leader in protecting lands and water.
Oh my gosh. So Barbie, you are one of the busiest people I think I know. And I was thinking that about Kate.
Oh my gosh.
Which is, I mean, we're three lay women on this podcast, and I feel like the whole podcast could just be listing all the things that we do.
I think it means that we can lead and we love our church.
Yes.
Yes.
It's one of those things where it's like we discern these roles and we're passionate and we're saying yes to as a faithful response, right? So thank you for faithfully responding to those calls that you both are in. Okay, so now I have our icebreaker question. Hilariously, I'm grateful that this is not a video podcast because of what I happen to be wearing at the moment, which is the loudest, most obnoxious shirt I own, but it's very soft and comfortable. So viewers can't see, or listeners can't see what I'm wearing, but my icebreaker for you two is, if all of your clothes had to be one color or one pattern for the rest of your life, what would you pick? Are so hilariously funny. I do wish this was a video podcast. I had my communications person, Adia, give me a list of icebreakers. And when I saw this one, I was like, oh, this one's for Kate and Barbie.
I have to think. You know, I normally would say like a color. I'd go with red. Like red is my favorite color, or green. But actually, kind of, I think if it would had to be one color for the rest of my life, it would probably be black.
Really?
Well, it goes with everything, right?
I don't know that I've ever seen you wear black.
You know, like, although I wear black, and then I, you know, and then I'm like, well, these two shades of black don't match. Somehow I can't ever find two shades of black that match. You know, in my closet, like pants and a shirt. It probably would be. But you could, just for the ease of like, you go to the store and there's always, mm-hmm. you know, you're kind of, you know, when, as you can find something, you can always find something that you like.
And if it worked for Johnny Cash, right?
Right. Sure, right. So, who knew?
What about you, Barbie?
Yeah, I want to be exciting, but I'm probably not.
Okay, Kate, I'll be a little more exciting, okay? So I have, even years ago, I have Barbie pajamas. And, you know, so I used to...
like Barbie the doll pajamas?
Yes, yeah, so yeah.
Does it have a pattern? Yeah, that's right. The Barbie ponytail?
Yeah, so Julia, so look, You know, I used to make phone calls and order takeout food and stuff, and they'd say, "Okay, what's the name on the order?" And I'd say Barbie, and then they'd say, "Like the doll?" And I say, "Yeah, like the doll." But it changed. You know, in July, I was ordering flowers for my daughter's wedding, and actually, they got married in the courthouse. So I just got a flower for my son-in-law to
Like a
wear. And
boutonniere. Yeah.
they said, "Okay, what's the name on the order?" And I said, "Barbie." And there was silence. And I said, "Like the movie?" I used to say, like, yeah, like the doll.
Like the
But
doll.
so now everybody's giving me these, now it's fashionable. Everybody's giving me these Barbie t-shirts and Barbie clothes and Barbie
Oh,
accessories.
right.
And so, yeah, that's what I'm wearing now. Just like pink Barbie shirts that say Barbie across them. So
That's what you would wear for the rest of your life. Are you, do you like it? Like, is this, you do? Okay. Did you like the Barbie movie?
Oh my gosh, yes.
I
Talk
loved
about
the
patriarchy and
movie.
women.
I saw
Yeah.
it once
That's
with
another
my daughter
podcast I
like
want
six
to
times.
have.
So go
What's
figure.
that,
I said my daughter saw it like six times.
Kate?
So, and all of a sudden she's, you know, she's 10 and she's rattling off things about the patriarchy and I'm like, okay.
Was so good. Oh my gosh. I could, yeah, that's a whole other podcast I want to have. Maybe in the future, after General Convention, we'll have podcasts about the Episcopal Church and the patriarchy and the Barbie movie and lessons we can learn. So tell us more. Let's go into our interim body work and the Blue Book, since it's the Blue Book, House of Deputies Blue Book podcast. So Barbie, tell us more about the interim body that you serve on and what initiatives are coming before General Convention this summer that's coming out of your interim body. Okay, first of all, let me say it was a truly great group of people who serve on this task force. Everybody was committed to working with disciples to steward God's great creation. And the leadership by the Reverend Stephanie Johnson was inspiring, and she led us to get so much done in a short time. And then,
Very short
second, yes,
time.
second, this task force was renewed for the 11th time, I believe. And that's 3 decades to address one of the most urgent and essential subjects in the history of the planet and all of God's creation. And a task force is constituted for one triennium. So, heads up, look for a proposed resolution to establish and organize this task into a standing commission. But in the short time that we had as a task force, we accomplished a lot. We administered one round of grants. We opened a second round of grants that the applications are going to be reviewed very soon. We developed a monthly creation care comp line, which was offered this month will be the 14th time it's been offered by Zoom, and about up to 50 people have been attending regularly. We developed we planned for an eco-justice loan program to help finance capital projects for dioceses to meet carbon net zero goals. We launched an eco-justice fellows program with 6 young adults, and this fellowship happened over the summer. We just a whole bunch of stuff. We engaged in discussions about environmental reparations. We got a biodiversity resolution approved by the Executive Council. We prepared questions for the presiding bishop candidates about environmental justice and climate change. And we also created an eco grief chapel, a prayer space and resources for climate change anxiety and lamentation. And this was piloted at It's All About Love in Baltimore, and it will be offered at General Convention. So that's a lot. That's not even everything.
It's a
And
lot in a very short biennium. And
yeah.
for our listeners to return back to, if that's the type of work that your task force has been doing, and that the task force continuously needs to be renewed,
which is one of the rationales for why you all have the resolution coming to General Convention this summer asking to be a standing commission. And again, for our listeners, standing commissions, unlike task forces, don't sunset. You can close them down at some point, but they are more longer lasting. They endure through general conventions, and they have two different classes, more like a vestry. So that way you have people rolling on, people coming off, and they're more permanent. Because with something like Care of Creation and Environmental Racism, we keep coming back to this theme over and over and over again, reconstituting task forces, when that's telling us that the Holy Spirit's telling us we should have a standing commission. So not that I'm plugging any particular resolution, just explaining standing commissions to our listeners versus task forces. So Kate, save me from myself. Tell me about your interim body and the work that you all
from the busiest task force to what we joked was the most efficient task force ever in the history of a triennium. Yes.
I think you guys were given 3 weeks to do everything, and you did it.
Yeah, we did. We did. So I served on the task force to study congregational vitality indicators. And this task force had a very narrow charge. And it was, you know, a lot of times task forces have much broader charges. This was really specific. And we were looking at whether or not we wanted to recommend that the parochial report be changed to include indicators of congregational vitality. And if so, what those might be. And ultimately we decided, for a variety of reasons that we can get into, that we didn't feel like the parochial report was the correct vehicle for that. And so we have one resolution coming out of our task force that kind of gets at what we do think is actually more helpful. Things like partnership and for diocese using page 5 of the parochial report and things like that. But we had a very narrow charge and we executed it very efficiently. That was our task force kind of in a nutshell.
Which, for people who are interested in the parochial report, a few episodes ago, we had someone from the House of Deputies State of the Church Committee. We had Deputy Eva Warren, who talked about all the changes that are coming in the parochial report and how it's being trimmed down to just a couple dozen questions, and they're much more open. And so the House of Deputies State of the Church Committee and the rest of the church would thank you and your committee, Kate Bond, for saying the parochial report does not need to be the place where we ask every question about everything all the time. So parish administrators across the church are all excited. Barbie, let's go back to, I know I talked a little bit about standing commissions earlier versus, you know, some of the structural components about what your task force is going to be bringing to General Convention. But can you tell us more about how the initiatives coming out of your task force will be challenging us as church and Episcopalians and deputies to live into our baptismal covenant at the 81st General Convention?
Yes. Well, the task force promotes challenging eco-justice positions to act to seek and serve Christ in all persons, loving your neighbor as yourself, and to strive for justice and peace among all people and respect the dignity of every human being. But there are at least three ways that the church can be challenged to live into our baptismal covenant. I'll try to summarize them briefly. it's essential for everyone to, it just should be a natural calling of our Christian responsibility to be responding to the needs of creation at this point. So we will challenge everyone to turn up your sensitivity to those people most suffering the effects of climate change, and to look for how to assist remedies from heat, floods, wildfires, provide cooling centers, fresh garden foods in areas that don't have it. And we need to listen and learn from indigenous practices that lived simply on the earth. I really learned a lot at COP26 and especially at COP28 from indigenous leaders all around the world who have such knowledge about just living more naturally and why, in this capitalist kind of environment, we have embraced wanton waste of natural resources and just plundering the earth and without regard for how it affects everyone else who's trying to live on this planet too. Mm-hmm. So one, we need to be concerned about just transition and advocate for making costs of renewable energy affordable for lower income families and support just transition for jobs to sustainable energy jobs. So it's one thing to tell everybody, well, you should be driving electric vehicles and you should be putting up solar panels. But for a lot of people, this is just beyond the reach of their economic ability. So it's going to be important to think about eco equity and equal and environmental justice. We need to change our personal habits and think about the environmental impact of our choices, especially, for example, on island nations where livelihood and even their ability to live are already threatened. Mm-hmm. We should, all of our choices matter. Whether you use gas stoves, your ability to reduce food waste, to compost, to reduce your meat consumption, to reduce plastics, don't drive gas vehicles, ride your bike, walk when you do your errands, and so much more. So another important way that our task force work will challenge us to really embody our baptismal covenant is the work that we did around significant discussions about environmental reparations. So the mission of the Episcopal Church, you can see it in the Catechism on page 855 in the Book of Common Prayer, states that the mission of the Church is to restore all people to unity with God and each other. So we need to full on deal with the enduring legacies of colonialism and slavery that have harmed human communities and the land. We have a long history of shameful government-sanctioned practices, of forced labor, forced removal from lands, land acts, redlining, mining, hazardous waste dumping, pollution, flood areas, all of this that have harmed groups of people. And most of our churches occupy land that was stolen from the land's original occupants. And acts of repatriation and restitution can restore people to unity with God and each other. Environmental reparations includes many other acts of justice, such as investing in communities of color that are most vulnerable to the effects of climate change. So I really think that we can be challenged individually, we can be challenged in the way that we live, in our choices, and in the way that your church even responds. So I was thinking about Kate and your church vitality and how it's, I'm just really being challenged right now with organizing parish work around environmental action. And even though it seems like it's a no-brainer and you can do things just like choose one thing at a time, just one thing, individually, everybody, there's just some resistance. It's kind of like apathy, or they don't know that even a small act can do a lot. And I think that that's one way for church growth is to have an active and vibrant environmental action group in your parish. It is the Christ-like thing to do. So
this is where Barbie, I'm like, Barbie should just be hosting this podcast, because I'm struck by and inspired by how you as a leader and your task force both were talking about things that we can do individually, right? Recycle, use less water, be intentional about our plastic use. But then also, and I spent some time with you all in your task force on when you guys were talking about environmental reparations and how interesting that discussion was. And I actually thought about it when I thought about bringing you on this podcast, because I really appreciated your leadership, Barbie, in that conversation. And how it's something like environmental reparations is not only that big thinking policy piece where people are going to have to wrap their minds around it. And what does this mean? And how does the Episcopal Church and all these countries do this? But at the same time, you're hitting at the local congregational level saying, what about, you know, having fresh food for people who otherwise can't afford it? So that's a community garden that a church can have. Or like in Oklahoma, where Kate and I are, our church had started a community garden a few years ago. And then we've also been in conversations with our local ELCA congregation who does styrofoam recycling, which sounds like not a big deal, but it's huge. Styrofoam and styrofoam recycling is a really big deal. And you're absolutely right, Barbie, that it's not just about what we ought to be doing, like how we're called to engage the earth, but it's also when people hear that we're doing these things and we're doing them together, or we're doing styrofoam recycling with the ELCA, they're like, oh, this is different. This is a church I want to be involved in. It's very different, especially for Oklahoma. But I'm talking a lot in this podcast, so I'm going to turn it over to Kate. But Barbie, I'm so inspired and so appreciate everything that you just said. Kate, you mentioned being the most efficient task force, but Barbie just touched on ways that even your most efficient task force of all time are going to be challenging us to live into our baptismal covenant general convention. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I think not necessarily the task force, but I think the idea of congregational vitality itself challenges us to live our congregational life differently. So, you know, the concept of congregational vitality and vitality in general really comes to us kind of from the health literature. And it's, the intention there is to be holistic. That when we look at systems and we look at broad scale institutions and all of their component parts, looking at one measure of one thing doesn't tell you much. So, you know, taking, you know, what we talked about in our task force, you know, looking at our average Sunday attendance or looking at our plate and pledge revenue is a measure, and it's helpful in a really specific sense. But when we start to think about how our system operates, and really for us, theologically, what are we really naming as how we participate in God's mission in the world? And that's really what vitality is about, is how we come alongside and participate in God's mission in the world. And there are so many different measures of that. It's contextual to your own congregation. It's contextual to your diocese. And it's really broad in trying to, it's both qualitative, it's quantitative. And so trying to find a way to really get at measuring what congregational vitality looks like is difficult. And we felt like there were tools already out there that did that well. And so we recommended those. But in terms of how we live into coming into God's mission in the world and being participants in that, we are, you know, finding, I'll just use examples from Oklahoma. I loved what Barbie was talking about with going back into and being in conversation with our indigenous partners. Mm-hmm. In Oklahoma, obviously, we have a really complicated history as it relates to indigenous peoples. And one of our congregations in rural Oklahoma, rural southeastern Oklahoma, this summer partnered with the Boys and Girls Club of the Seminole Nation. And their summer program that they hosted was all about indigenous food practices. Helping in particular, this church is located within the confines of the Seminole Nation in Oklahoma, helping indigenous youth, but also other youth, start to have access to practices, for example, foraging and hunting and food preparation practices that live more lightly on the earth, and also connect spiritually across culture and across time and across experience. And so that was a beautiful partnership. And that's one of the things that I think that Vitality encourages in terms of how we live into God's mission is the idea of partnering in our communities. How do we start to reach out into our communities? For you as a congregation, is that an environmental justice initiative? Is it racial justice? Is it reparations? Is it helping the homeless in your community? And sometimes there's a little bit of, you know, try and fail in that process. You know, we have to try new things, but we're really looking at, you know, how do we start to re-envision what it means to be communities of faith? And I think that's really what Vitality is getting at. One of the things that can sometimes be disheartening for me personally in my work in the Diocese of Oklahoma is when I go to talk to congregations and the definition of what they think it looks like to do the work of the church is how many people are in the pew and how many dollars are in the bank account.
Yeah.
Because that's right. What we've measured. And even though collectively we've talked about, yes, we're more than that, and we know we're more than that, at the end of the day, it feels like for congregations sometimes that in Oklahoma that that's how they're going to be remembered and how they're going to be seen and whether they're successful or not, which I hate that word. But and when the reality is what we should be measuring is how are you in participating in God's mission in the world? And how are you a co-participant? And how are you discovering that for yourself? So how are you discerning God's mission and how are you engaging God's mission? And there's so many different ways for us to look at how we do that.
Oh my gosh, I am so inspired. I'm like, my like heart feels like it's going to explode because thinking about the church in the Seminole Nation working with the Boys and Girls Club there and how that overlaps with what Barbie just said, but how you were talking, Kate, about so let me back up to say it somehow was lost on me that Congregational Vitality came out of a medical health sort of mindset. And once you think about it that way, it's a whole different deal. Then we're not talking about plate and pledge. We're not talking about ASA, average Sunday attendance. We're talking about whole health well-being. And I know what it means for me to be healthy is different for what it means for you to be healthy, Kate, or for you, Barbie. And so here we have a church in a unique situation. And you said the church is in the boundaries of the Seminole Nation, right? Yeah. Working with the Boys and Girls Club there, that health, that type of vitality and health and wellness and being the hands and feet of Jesus is super hyper contextualized, right? And working with the indigenous group to be able to look at the more traditional ways of food preparation and gathering is also incredibly contextualized when it comes to environmental racism and care of creation. And in that sense, it's like, oh my gosh, I get it. That's health right there. That's not average Sunday attendance stuff. That's what we're called to do and be. And I'm just, oh my gosh, I'm just gushing. Barbie, you seemed to, did you have a reaction to any of that that Kate just said? Because it seemed like you did. And I want to offer you opportunity to talk if you wanted to.
That's one of the issues that I get, some people say I get too hypersensitive about, let's look at this through an anti-racism lens. Because it sounds like when you're talking about, you know, ASA and plate and pledge, it's like, it's the white white leadership, white guy, you know, it is, and that's not what we are. You know, I feel like if it was for like, even for churches of color, it's a different thing too. It is, what are you providing for your community and for your people, as far as, you know, feeding their spirit, and that this is a place that you're proud to come to because of what it represents, not the thing that you're, that we're, the data we're collecting in the parochial report so much. So I really like the work in the with the Seminole Nation, and that is just, that's like a goal, you know, that's how churches should be.
I'm actually thinking that we should reach out to ENS to see if they'll, Episcopal News Service, to see if they'll cover the story on that. I probably shouldn't have said that in the podcast, but we need to do this. Let's cross-pollinate. It's so life-giving. I'm getting all, anyway. So as we keep thinking about the 81st General Convention and how you both are on legislative committees, so you're already doing some of the work leading up to the 81st General Convention. But as we are living on this journey where we're in it, but we're also looking forward to it, what are some of the things that you're most excited about when you think about General Convention this summer? Barbie, I'll ask you to go first.
You know, a lot of times I'm so proud of our church. So I'm excited about celebrating the very good positions that the Episcopal Church takes on issues to heal where our world hurts. Mm. And, you know, I think that, wasn't it in Austin, at the 79th convention, when, what is that Baptist church that was there protest to demonstrate mm-hmm. against our good positions. Mm-hmm. And some priest said to me, well, that means I'm proud of our church. That means we're doing it right. If they're here to object.
To how inclusive we are. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm just looking forward to celebrating the good works of the church and what we represent. And personally, I'm also looking forward to organizing and advocating with the deputies of color and the green deputies caucuses.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the green deputy caucus? Because that's a new one that listeners might not know as well.
It didn't come out of our task force work, but the task force does support it. And there are several members of the task force who are deputies to convention who will be part of the Green Caucus. So it's called the Creation Care Caucus, and it was actually a lay alternate deputy from California. This is just grassroots organizing, saying that if we want to stand up for the right positions on environmental resolutions at General Convention, we have to have a strong voice. And so we took our cue from deputies of color and from the green bishops. So the House of Bishops has green bishops. And so this caucus has been meeting monthly, and it has been growing by word of mouth pretty much. And we tried to get some word out there in the press. And we will be getting together and you know, looking at the resolutions coming forward.
Thanks, Barbie. And before I call on you, Kate, to see what you're excited about for General Convention, just a shout out, in the House of Deputies monthly newsletter, as we head into General Convention, we're going to have a caucus section. So I think it was last month or the month before, Adia would know better, we had the announcement from Green Caucus. And so people can look and scroll through. And as we get closer and closer, I'm sure we'll have more announcements from other caucuses. So you can find information there as well. What are you looking forward to, Kate?
I love the work leading up to General Convention. I'm a nerd like that. I really appreciate like reading the resolutions, and you can just sense the work and the depth of thought that has gone into so many of them. I really appreciate the hearings and the thoughts that people bring into those hearings. I very much appreciate the work that goes into that and the time and the preparation. I am not like a read the whole blue book from cover to cover kind of person, but I will kind of go down the rabbit hole of like looking through resolutions by committee. That's kind of the way I organize it in my brain. And just I just really kind of like to nerd out with that. But that's really what I'm looking forward to is I think I learn so much about our church, and I learn so much about the people in our church and the needs of our church, and the people that are bringing those needs to us. I think that that's really important. And that's not just the work of deputies, it's really the work of all of us. And so, and that's accessible to everyone, which I appreciate. And then personally, I just, it's one of the few times that there are people who are deep personal friend relationships that I don't get to see much anymore. Back when I did parish ministry, in formation in particular, I had friends that I saw on a regular basis, and now we've all kind of gone into different roles of ministry in the church, and General Convention seems to be the place where we all gather. And there's just I'm looking forward to being able to see them and celebrate their work that they're bringing with them to General Convention as well. So.
It is that summer camp experience, right? Like we get to go back and see our summer camp friends and hang out with them.
Yeah,
I will
it is.
also say, on the point of personal privilege to listeners, that Kate and I, if I hope it's okay, I go here, we're part of the same program at the University of Oklahoma with the same advisor. So I was sitting here
Well,
like
10 years
watching you
apart.
10 years apart, right? Even though we're about the same age and our advisor is our age too, and all that kind of stuff. But the fact that you like the participatory democracy with like, and you've talked about theories of representation. I'm like, oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah,
Once
Kate and I have
a scientist,
that
always a political scientist,
in
right? Like, it doesn't ever leave you.
common. Yeah. I totally get it. Like hearings, right? The fact that anyone can participate in a hearing. So this is where I'm going to keep like dosing little bits of our governance and polity into this podcast. You don't have to be a deputy or any kind of like imagined leadership that you might have in the Episcopal Church to go to a hearing. Anyone can go to a hearing and testify to any resolution. And honest to God, that makes me so happy. I can't even tell you. Like, I just want to burst with like glitter everywhere whenever I think about how open and accessible our governance can be in that way. And anyway, so maybe that's what drew us to the same program, and maybe that's what draws us to General Convention too, is that we have that in common. Well, thank you both for being here. As we conclude our discussion today, I want to sincerely thank Deputies Kate Bond and Barbie Bach for their enlightening contributions. Their valuable perspectives have shed light on the important work of these task forces. To our listeners, thank you for joining us as we explored how the Episcopal Church addresses contemporary challenges of our church growth through faith, justice, and sustainability. Your engagement and curiosity drive this podcast. We are eager to hear your thoughts and questions. Please feel free to contact us through our website or social media channels. Tune in to our next episode on April 24th, when we'll discuss another critical aspect of our church's life and mission. Until then, keep reflecting, keep faith at the center of your 81st General Convention journey. Thank you for listening to the House of Deputies Blue Book podcast. Go in peace.
You're invited to join thousands of Episcopalians, neighbors, and friends this summer at the Love Always Revival at the KFC Yum Center in Louisville, Kentucky. On Saturday, June 22nd, get immersed in inspiring worship and community, deepen your love for God, kick off the 81st General Convention, and extend a warm welcome to folks discovering the Episcopal Church. The revival is free to attend, so bring your friends. If you're from a neighboring diocese, check in with your diocesan revival champion to find out about group travel options. You can find more information along with registration at iam.ec/lovealways.